A note to the listener. The following story contains some adult content and language. And so it comes to this. No long-winded recap or explanation of any kind. Here we are at the end of it. The end of Hank's journey and of ours. So I'm just going to sit back and be quiet and allow us to finish what we started.
Welcome back, Mr. Briggs. I've been very much looking forward to this. Please come in.
No butler today?
I only hire assistants when I'm entertaining. When it comes to all the odds and ends, I know what I like, but I don't know how to prepare and present it.
So no tea, then?
Of course there's tea. I had just assumed you wanted to relay the information and get back to life as usual.
Life as usual? Is that how you think this works?
I would hope that you would be able to separate yourself from the work long enough to enjoy life, yes.
You don't know anything about my life.
Hank, I think you've forgotten why I hired you. See? Tea.
What's in the envelope?
Why, that's the second half of your payment, Mr. Briggs. You didn't think I'd forgotten, did you?
That simple, huh?
It's all there. Shouldn't it be that simple?
Sure. But neither of us knows if I actually solved anything.
Solve. That was always a pressure word. For motivation, if you will. I said you would be chasing information and chase information you have. I would never allow you to go without reward for all your efforts. Unless you feel that you have been careless, that's another matter entirely.
I wouldn't say careless, but I do have a few questions. I realize that I wasn't as thorough as I could have been when you first brought me into this. But that's the tricky thing about hindsight, right?
By all means, ask me anything.
Who do you think killed her?
I really wouldn't know.
No, I know. But if you had to guess, who'd you lean towards? I call it a hunch, you know? Those instincts of mine you talked about, the ones that make me Picasso. You must have some of those instincts, right?
I don't consider myself a detective in the slightest, Mr. Briggs.
Not even one guess? Come on, humor me. All this chasing, all this work, don't you want to know if you were right? I did. I had a hunch when I started hunting and scrounging. Come on, just play along and take a guess. If it turns out to be right, fastest murder ever solved.
This is a very strange exercise, Mr. Briggs. I haven't the faintest idea.
One guess.
Was it the doctor?
Damn good guess, but no.
You know, people still believe he was responsible for it, even after he had been cleared.
I was one of those people.
Really?
Yep. Twice.
Very interesting. I'm curious as to why.
Clean cuts. Precision. Would have taken years of experience to be able to cut her up like that.
That's very astute of you.
But it couldn't have been him.
You're sure?
Without question. His alibi checked out. Clean as a whistle.
Oh. That's a relief. You see, that is a job well done on your part.
Do you know Adler Harrison?
I can't say that I do. Why?
Relief. Relief is a pretty strong word to use for someone you've never met.
You don't have to know someone to have empathy for them, Mr. Briggs. I think you've done a wonderful thing for this man. Once the press are able to properly exonerate him, he may be able to piece his career back together after all.
Press? Who's going to care at this point?
You don't think the public will want to know?
Old news. Plus, he's busy with Leonard Shaw's dirty work, so I don't think he's going to want too much attention.
Leonard Shaw?
The king himself. The last place he expected to be was in the middle of all this with a punk like me questioning him.
You met with Leonard Shaw?
I did. And he's every bit the prick I've been told he was. He's sick, you know. Kidneys are failing.
That poor man.
Oh, I wouldn't waste your empathy on old Leo. With any luck, he'll go quick.
I'm surprised at you, Mr. Briggs. I wouldn't have expected you to be so frivolous in regards to another's suffering.
It's funny you should say that, Sam.
Why is that?
That was my impression of you, too.
She didn't suffer, Hank. Not at any point did Marlene suffer.
So you don't deny it?
Hank, I think we've done enough dancing today, don't you? Butler, T, Hunch, Adler, Dip. Once you said it wasn't Adler, I was satisfied.
You wanted me to know it was you.
Now, that's not true. I was perfectly content to part ways with you today as the charitable donor despite your failures. But once you mentioned Leonard, I knew you'd gotten closer than you were ever supposed to. You may not be a detective, Hank, but you're certainly not an idiot. Follow me. Hank, why don't you just follow me and you can have all your answers before you walk out of here.
So all of this was what? You were bored?
Bored? Quite the contrary. I've been more invested in this than anything I've ever done.
Did you meet her at Shaw's?
I did. And that vile gigolo of a doctor stalking her, hoping to make her one of his conquests. She had no interest in him at first, but at each gathering, however subtle, I could see a flirtation growing.
And then what?
I wanted to paint her. She understood that I wasn't a threat to her. Right over there is where she sat for me, and often it was there that we developed our friendship.
You killed her in here?
I wanted to capture what light she afforded the world before it left her in the same way it leaves all of the innocents.
Did you kill her in here?
Yes, she died in this room, yes. But as I said, she didn't suffer.
I don't understand the why of any of this. Why?
Out of reverence for her.
Reverence? You pried her ribs apart and drained her.
I removed her impurity. Once the barbiturates entered her, she was no longer clean.
You left her in a parking lot.
So that she would be more accessible to the common man, just like the construction worker who found her, just like you.
No, this doesn't make any sense.
Of course it does. You're just not listening. Listen. Anyone is capable of being renewed. Anyone is capable of salvation.
Well, you opened her arms and you crossed her legs. What did all that mean, huh?
The search for artistic meaning has become overbearingly unoriginal, don't you think? It was simply the position in which I felt that her innocence would be best preserved. And meaning destroys purity. Meaning is when my art began to suffer the most. An obsession with meaning. As contradictory as it may sound, I would rather that we as intellectuals abandon the need for meaning. All of us. For it is only in the absence of meaning that we are emotionally and psychologically free to experience. There was a woman. Well, there's always a woman, isn't there? As appropriately so, as that is how we all come into this world. Her name was Genevieve, and she took such loving care of me, such care that my memories honored her more than anyone. Still do. See, I wasn't ready. My style was crude. It certainly wasn't art. It was harried and clumsy, and I was ashamed. See, I wanted to be rid of my failure, but it being quite a different canvas, it's not as if she could be thrown out in the bins. Although in retrospect, I suppose I could have. But I was so young, impetuous, and overcome with fear and adrenaline. My only thought was fire. It was the only way in which I could absolve myself of both the shame and the act. My initial experience when she was gone, oh, it was unbearable. I was 19 years old. The pain that I felt was excruciating. As if someone was standing on my chest, peeling away what I felt for her an inch at a time. Pure pain. Raw emotional movement that only exists in nature. I tried to find meaning in her death for years after I left Paris, and the more I uncovered about her sordid tale of prostitution and disease and drug addiction, the more I uncovered about my own prejudice, I could no longer recognize her when I thought of her. My thoughts were clouded with judgment and expletives and contempt. So I thought of her less. And so I felt less. Until I felt nothing. Ironic, isn't it, that the end of my quest for meaning, she no longer held any meaning. And so I wept. Not for her, not for me, but for the loss of feeling itself. I wanted that feeling again. I wanted that feeling of loss, of emptiness, the raw emotional movement. I didn't ask Marlene any personal questions, not one. See, I didn't want any part of her past. I wanted to know her, experience her only as she was at that time of her life. I wanted to ensure her a perfect future. I wanted to develop the love necessary to feel it ripped from me the moment she was gone.
Her parents sat right out there.
I know. I brought her parents here when the feelings began to fade. There's nothing more powerful and more innocent than a mother's love, and I'd hoped that her parents' recollections of her might stir something inside of me, but nothing! Nothing. And so it will continue, as it always has. And she, like the others, will remain in this room with me as I search for inspiration once again.
What do you mean, remain in this room?
I'm not a butcher, Hank. I'm an artist. My love for them went into my art. They are in my art. They are all in my art.
Wait.
In doing so, I make them clean again.
What is that?
It's a rebirth on canvas.
No, that's paint.
No, that is very much Marlene's blood. You know it.
How many are against the wall?
27. This one is Marlene. She's unfortunately the 28th. She was never intended for this series. There should have only have ever been 27 paintings. Marlene was my masterpiece. I was certain that she wouldn't, that she couldn't be ignored. She should have been the focal point of our time. Not the irresponsible and reckless death of a heartthrob or foreign nuclear weapons testing, certainly not backseat to the most handsome bachelor of the year on the cover of Life magazine. She should have been on the cover of Life if we're all being honest with ourselves. I didn't want her to disappear, and so I made her clean again. My hope in you was that whatever you found would resurrect her importance. She could once again be unique as a work of art, a sculpture of beauty distorted in her human form, fragmented in body, but never in soul. My unquestionable concrete saint.
Twenty-seven others.
She wasn't meant for this, Hank. And I assure you, she wasn't.
Oh, Hank, I hardly think that's necessary.
And that's where it ended. The tape didn't run out. There was more tape, but it was all blank. I threw in two more random tapes, and it was an older Hank. So I pressed stop. And I sat there, and I knew who had killed Marlene Marie Evans. I knew who had killed the Angel of Vine. And there was the confession. And now what was I supposed to do with it? This was a little bit bigger than an internet search, so I called the Herald's contact within the LAPD, who connected me to the cold case unit. I arranged to meet with them and hand over the tapes pertinent to the Angel of Vine. And the rest is the rest. Actually, I shouldn't say the rest is the rest. That's too flippant. I don't want to dishonor Marlene's memory that way. Marlene had no next of kin. No one connected to her is still alive. But I would like us to take a moment to acknowledge her. May she rest in peace. I would also like to acknowledge that thanks to Hank Briggs, this is the oldest cold case ever to have been solved. But now we're faced with a new question. What the hell happened to Samuel Tench? Throughout his life and career, Samuel Tench was incredibly reclusive. No family, no close friends, per se, only acquaintances. So he was free to travel to any destination, anywhere on the planet, at any moment in time. And he did. The only person in his life with whom he had consistent contact with was his art dealer and occasional confidant, Theodore Redmond. Redmond said that he had learned to live with the disappearing acts. It was part of Tench's creative process, he said. And whether it had been weeks or even months, when Tench would return from a pilgrimage, he would do so without apology or explanation, as if he had never left. When Redmond couldn't get in touch with Tench around the fall of 1957, it was perfectly natural for him to think that Tench had left on another one of his excursions. By March of 1959, and still with no word from him, Redmond just assumed that Tench didn't want to be found, that he had decided to leave the art world his way. In the summer of 1961, Redmond sold all of Samuel Tench's assets at auction, all except for the portraits that Redmond found in the studio behind the garden. Those went back to New York with Redmond. Some were sold, some were loaned to museums and other galleries. But that's all irrelevant now. As of today, you won't be able to find one of the 27 Samuel Tench watercolor portraits anywhere in the world, not in the Musée Stockholm, the Tate, the Broad, Guggenheim, a private collector's home, nowhere. They've all been collected as evidence because of Hank's tapes. Think about this. Tench's portraits, painted in the blood of his 27 victims, were hanging in some of the most famous spaces in the world for 5 decades, seen by billions of unaware patrons, some of whom probably got very close to the canvas, as art observers tend to do. That's insane. And what's even more insane is that there was an exhibition that took place at the Redmond Gallery in New York City in 1995 of all 27 portraits. All 27 victims were in the same room at the same time. Nobody knew. And when the exhibition was over, they were each shipped back to wherever they came from. Until today. Now remember, Tench said he only intended for there to be 27. Marlene made 28. But there are only 27 portraits. Where is Marlene's watercolor portrait? It was never found. Redmond only brought 27 back to New York with him. So, the mystery of the Angel of Vine is solved, only to become the mystery of Samuel Tench and the mystery of Hank Briggs. For Tench, how many victims were there prior to him perfecting his art? And will we ever find out the names of the 27? For Hank, why didn't he tell anyone? I'll tell you what I think. I think Hank Briggs killed Samuel Tench. I think he was face to face with a serial killer who he knew would kill again. Now, there's absolutely zero proof that he killed Tench, so why hide the tapes? Guilt? Shame? Why did Hank become the recluse that Samuel Tench had been? Is that the trade-off once you've killed? I don't know. But that's what became of him. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Hank just walked away that day, out of the garden, down the hall, and into his car with $10,000 in cash. And maybe Tench did retire from the art world to spend the rest of his days in solitude overseas. It's possible. But I don't believe that. And Hank's family didn't either.
You know how in every engagement story, one person gets awkward and clumsy and the other freaks out? Mm. This was that.
Who was who in this case?
I freaked out.
Really?
After we spoke.
Okay, I was going to say, you sounded perfectly calm on the phone.
Well, because my first reaction was confusion, then shock, then freak out.
I probably should have led with, are you sitting down?
All you said was, he solved it. And then I have no idea what you said, but I did hear it was Tench, and that's when the adrenaline kicked in.
When did she tell you?
As soon as we got off the phone.
She never calls the restaurant. Scared me half to death. Middle of the rush, and Dale comes to the front and says, it's Beth, it's urgent.
I don't even know what I said.
You were yelling, I need the art for Oscar, I need the art for Oscar, I need to send the book and the art to Oscar, so I said, go get him, Tiger, right? No, that wasn't it? Oh, right, the keys. Okay, what I said was, why the hell are you calling me when you've got a set of keys? Go get them, Tiger.
Then I told her about our call and Hank and Tench.
And all I could think was, get that artwork out of my house.
That is all you said. All you said was, get that artwork out of my house.
Just to clarify for our listeners, what art are we talking about here?
The art that we found in the attic.
In Hank's house?
Yes. Specifically, three rolled canvases of Samuel Tench originals.
I want to make it clear to our listeners that they are not three of the 27.
Oh, no, absolutely not, no.
I have seen these works, I have handled them. They were definitely painted with acrylics.
It was paint, thank God.
Now, you also mentioned a book.
Yes, collected poems of Robert Service.
And what was the inscription?
Hank, to paint and canvas. Samuel.
Hank's toast the day Tench hired him.
So creepy.
Let's shift subjects. What I really want to ask you about is Hank. Now, when I met you both almost a year ago, how many of the tapes did you listen to?
None.
Just a sample.
And now how many have you listened to?
All of them.
All of them.
What did your sister say?
She has no memory of him at all, so it didn't really make a difference to her. She thought it was a good story, but that was about it.
What's the biggest difference for you now?
I definitely think he killed Tench.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Beth?
I'm kind of leaning that way, too.
What's the hesitation?
I don't know. I don't think there's any way to explain what it feels like to get to know your grandfather, get to like the man that you're getting to know, and then all of a sudden have to think of the possibility that this person who you really like may have murdered someone. Does that make any sense? It's difficult to understand.
Yeah, no, perfect sense. I get it.
And see, for me, it's kind of the opposite. I liked him more for the idea that he was with a man he knew would kill again if given the chance. And he dealt with it.
Interesting.
I mean, I'm not advocating for vigilantism, but in this case, you know, greater good and all that.
Did you wonder if maybe that's why he didn't come home when it was done?
I didn't, actually. What I thought about the most was that my mother had absolutely no idea that any of this was going on. And I wish he could have known. I think it would have answered a lot of questions for her.
Did it answer questions you had?
Yeah. I mean, sure. I have a better understanding of who he was, and that would make sense if that's why he disappeared.
Did it change how you felt about him?
You know, I don't know yet. I definitely felt sorry for him, but how I feel about him? It's a good question. I'll have to get back to you.
You know I'll hold you to that, right?
Please don't.
Well, I think I can safely speak for an entire community of people when I say thank you. And personally, I would like to thank you both very, very much for trusting me with this man's life. Thank you for reaching out to me in the first place. And thank you for letting me into your home and your family history. And for being so open to all of my questions.
Thank you.
Seriously, thank you for taking on this responsibility.
It was my pleasure. And I'm fairly confident that this experience will remain a highlight. I think that does it.
What time's your flight?
What time is my flight?
When I started this project, I didn't think there would be a definitive answer to my questions. I thought we would learn more details in the Angel Levine case, more facts that would elaborate on what we already knew. But I really didn't think there would be an actual ending. There were so many tapes. There are so many tapes. And they span from the last tape that I played you well into Hank's old age. And like Beth and Phyllis, I listened to everything that Hank Briggs had to say. Here was a family man with a great sense of humor. A salt of the earth, do the right things, stand-up guy who didn't have a mean bone in his body. yet to catch a killer, he may have had to become one. What does that do to a person like Hank? For someone who was a good cop and wanted more than anything to be a great detective. Whatever went on in that studio after he stopped the tape, that is another mystery altogether. But if Hank the cop vanished that day, then why not destroy the tapes? Why not destroy the art in the book of poetry? Unless that's all that was left to remind him of who he was and what he had sacrificed it all for. Hank Briggs was a damn good detective. even if he didn't have a badge to show for it. I, for one, hope that he knew that. And that he left all of this for us so that we would too. There was a lot of information here. And I tried to compile it as efficiently and as effectively as possible in order to bring you this story. It was an important story. Hank was onto something when he started recording the world around him. And by taking the time to stop and listen, he didn't have to miss a thing. As I leave you with Hank's final words, I would like to say thank you. Thank you for listening. I'm Oscar Simons, and this was The Angel of Vine.
It's easy to cry that you're beaten and dying. It's easy to crawfish and crawl, but to fight and to fight when hope's out of sight, well, that's the best game of them all. And though you come out of each grueling bout broken, battered, and scarred, just have one more try. It's dead easy to die. It's the keeping on living that's hard. I know. Dinner time. I'm coming.
Thank you for listening to The Angel of Vine. If you'd like to support us, please leave us a review and tell your friends to subscribe. The Angel of Vine is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and all major podcast apps. If you want more of The Angel of Vine, please check out our bonus episodes and extended episodes available exclusively on Stitcher Premium, including cast interviews, behind-the-scenes stories, journeys through old Hollywood, and much more. This season's performances by Joe Manganello, Constance Zimmer, Camilla Luddington, Oliver Vaquer, Alan Tudyk, Mike Coulter, Misha Collins, Alfred Molina, Kari Payton, Nolan North, Cree Summer, Rebecca Field, Eric Bauza, Matthew Mercer, Travis Willingham, Kari Walgren, Courtney Taylor, Steve Bloom, Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, Coco Lamoureux, Tom Sibley, Ali Ruddy, Amari Williams, William Demerit, Delaney Hillen, Patrick Ezell, Philip Mershon. The Angel of Vine was written by Oliver Vaquer, directed by E. Ryan Martz, story by E. Ryan Martz, Jason Zumwalt, and Oliver Vaquer. Lead sound designer was Joel Robbie. Additional sound design by Kevin Duzablon, Matt Tamarello, and Andrew Vernon. Recording engineer was Colin Rogers. Produced by Vox Populi Incorporated, in association with Forever Dog Podcast Network. Associate producers William Chip Beeman and Julia Bianco of the Halp Network. Recorded at Roundabout Entertainment, Burbank, California. Angel Eyes, performed by Desi Dennis Dillon. Piano arrangement by James Harper. Composed by Matt Dennis. Lyrics by Earl Brent. Cover art by Studio La Sera. This has been Season 1 of The Angel of Vine. Thank you for listening.